Morning. The time is 8:35. We have just one bill on the agenda today, SB 159 by Senator Menard. Present, we have Representative Sisna, Osterman, Gardner, and Munoz. I've kept the public testimony, a portion of the meeting open, so if there's anybody in the audience or signed up, we will provide opportunity for testimony. Would the sponsor of the bill come forward, Representative Menard, for presentation and any questions, please? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and good morning, committee members. And I appreciate that you're hearing the bill today. But I will keep it real brief. I am, for the record, Senator Linda Menard. I represent District G, Palmer and Wasilla. So in the interest of time, like I said, I'll make sure that I keep this brief. To sum it up, Senate Bill 159 establishes the Susitna State Forest on 763,200 acres of state land located in the Matsu Borough. The land will be managed for a sustainable yield of timber, and the forest will be open to multiple use. That includes hunters, trappers, miners, fish, etc., 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 dog mushing, everything. Madam Chair, in this committee on Tuesday, we heard support from the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, foresters, mill owners. Further, Chris Mache, the director of the Division of Forestry, gave a presentation and answered the committee's questions. Mr. Mache also sent to each member yesterday a memo addressing questions about the access within the proposed forest. Madam Chair, as I testified on Tuesday, this state forest has been in the works for many years, and the division has worked diligently on their plan. The Susitna State Forest will be the fourth state forest in the state, allowing residents and mills in the Matsu to benefit as other areas with state forests have. In the interest of time, I'll end my testimony there, and Mr. Mache is with us today to answer any further questions.
Thank you, Senator Menard. Please let the record show that we've been joined by Representatives Foster and Dick, please. Thank you. Are there questions for Senator Menard? Yes, Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Menard, the questions, some of the people who testified at the last hearing, we're talking about probably, and what I would guess would be the people who actually have in holdings, because there was a certain group were saying that they hadn't been heard. And I'm just the bill gives time for
three years
for future planning. And can you tell me how you envision that working out to bring the people who, and I was very involved with Chugach State Park, and in holdings in that park were a problem. It was something that had to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering how you see it playing out in those 3 years so that the in holdings will actually come to a place where it works.
Mm-hmm. And thank you, and that's a very good question. And I would respond to that I have a lot of faith and trust in the Forestry Division, and they fully intend to have this all well vetted. I think it's a great thing that they do have these in holdings, and in perpetuity, this is going to stay a state forest. So I feel, from my standpoint, they're very fortunate that they don't have to run the risk of being one subdivision or being trade off for borough land for something else, because as I mentioned earlier, there is 9 million acres of state land in the Matsu Borough, and this is less than 5%. So again, the Division of Forestry will do their due diligence, as well as our office, and they have known of this state forest for years and years. It's certainly been talked about and at the forefront in the 90s, and it's just like Tanana State Forest or Haines State Forest. There's always in holdings. People love to get up and be in the wilderness, the reality is they don't own the land around them. So we had, instead of just making it continuous, we did blocks to incorporate them so that they could still have the lifestyle they're used to. And the beauty for them is the roads will be improved because the Division of Forestry will have the resources to build better roads and better access. So all Alaskans, and just to my final, I'll just sum it up, this is really good legislation and appreciate your support. And again, the director of forestry is here, and he can answer any real technical questions as far as access and the plans and who was already contacted in those areas. But they have done their due diligence.
Okay. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry I had to miss the first meeting on this bill. But and I spoke with you just a little bit this morning about an email from Mr. McKibbins from Craig on Prince of Wales Island. And is he on the line by chance?
No, he is not.
He raised a concern, and I'd just like to kind of ask his question on the record, and that was about having the Tongass Forest added in after your original submission. Mm-hmm. And his concern was that there wasn't a public process locally in the area that's impacted about having this. There weren't public meetings and things like that. And so I'd just like to get your comments on that on the record.
Well, on the record, that was intent language put in, and that was put in at the Senate finance level. But anyway, that encourages, it's just intent language to encourage the governor to urge Tongass to be opened up and looked at. It's just an awareness intent language in there because there's a lot of heartburn and hurt feelings over that more land wasn't allowed in the Tongass for harvesting wood and for the mills. So I think that was a fair insert on that CS. So it's just, again, intent language to the governor to urge him to look at the Tongass Forest and opening that up. So.
On that point, is the intent to add to the state forest the lands that were legislated last year? And if so, would that be other state land or are we looking to make application to the federal government?
Okay. I'm going to ask, if you don't mind, I have my chief of staff here, Michael Rivito, and he's worked diligently on this bill, and so you can speak to that CS, please.
Yeah, for the record, Michael Rivito, staff of Senator Menard. It's, in terms of the intent language, I guess the broad scope of it was just to get more of the Tongass into state hands. And make it state land. I'm not sure exactly what forestry would have in mind for incorporation to the Southeast State Forest or which way, I'm sure Chris can answer that, which way they would want to go with that land, but the whole, like the broad intent was to get more of that land in under state purview so that we would have more control over it as opposed to having it in under, you know, federal guidance.
And if I might just add one other thing, you know, we are a very wealthy state. The upwards of $16 billion now. We have the money, and the federal government at this point is crying that they're broke. And so, you know, it was just kind of a little urging that we have the ability to purchase land from the federal government, and we're just noticing it here. And it's certainly nothing that's, you know, demanding, but just an awareness intent.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, is Chris Mitch going to speak?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll hold my questions.
Okay. Representative Osterman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Deshka and the Yetna River are major systems within the Matsu that are failing as salmon streams. And there's been some major problems for years up there. And my Fish and Game Habitat Division testified in this bill in reference to those issues that may be created by logging operations around those river systems.
Through the Chair, Representative Osterman, Fish and Game has not testified on this bill so far. My understanding of the Forest Practices Act is that there is provisions in place to address the preservation of those sorts of streams that might fall within a state forest. Mr. Mage can speak to the details of that, but there is already in statute specific buffer zones set out that would protect those streams so that, you know, wood is not falling into them or the habitats around them aren't disturbed by any sort of activities that might go on around them. So that, I think that's been thought of already in terms of the implications to salmon streams or fish streams.
It's just a concern of mine that having that we do have problem streams up there already, that systems that have failed, and those systems are going to run right straight through this forest. And it's a concern of mine that that we've addressed that issue, and maybe resources can take it up when this bill moves forward. But it's a concern. It's not just the setbacks sometimes that take place. It's the cumulative effect of the rapid growth of the Mat-Su Valley and the cumulative effect on those systems. And now you put a forest on top and you ask commercial logging to go on inside that forest. It just raises that concern.
Additional comments from the sponsor at this point? Would you? No? Okay. I'd like to call up Chris. Thank you very much for your testimony. I'd like to call up Chris Mache with the DNR for questions, please.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, committee. For the record, my name is Chris Mache, the director of the Division of Forestry and State Forester. And if you'd like, I was keeping notes there. I could jump into the questions that were asked through the chair to Representative Gardner. I think your question about public meetings and the intent language is currently in Section 2. As you're probably aware, the governor's appointed a Jobs and Timber Task Force through an administrative order to actually talk about this topic in Southeast Alaska and the crisis that Southeast is facing in terms of some of the timber issues. There actually have been, the task force has been meeting around the state. They were in the community of Kaufman Cove where they held a meeting, and all these meetings have been advertised or open to the public. Also, they've met in Ketchikan. They've met all over Southeast Alaska over the last 7 months. One of the recommendations that will be coming forthcoming in a final report to the governor for his consideration contains the same suggestions that are currently in Section 2 of this bill. So this concept has started to been discussed in Southeast Alaska. It's still a concept that's under discussion. There will actually be quite a range of other options for the executive branch to consider in terms of how to address the timber supply issue in Southeast Alaska.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Gardner.
So this task force is meeting in different parts of Southeast, and they are discussing the specific elements of Section 2 of the bill?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Gardner, that is correct. And in fact, I think the thinking on these ideas probably were generated by different people that have been involved in the task force already. There's been ongoing dialogue about that, and I believe that's where this particular amendment probably was picked up.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Sisna and then Representative Dick.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And my original question of the sponsor was about the bill itself dealing with the Mat-Su forest. And what I know just from experience further south, not too much further south, but is that the community that actually exists within this forest is going to be really the example that could be created for future forests that are somewhat similar, where there's a lot of inholdings. Mm-hmm. And it really does make for a real challenge to really meet that need. And the Tongass is just intent language, which means that it's not really creating it without there being further action, right?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Sisna. That's correct. This is intent language. There would be a lot of process that would have to occur before that intent could actually be expressed in actions. It would actually require federal legislation if the state were to reopen its Statehood Act and reprioritize some of the remaining selections that we still have to receive. There would be quite a bit of process that would have to occur for that intent to be expressed in actual actions on the ground.
All right. Madam Chair, if I could follow up. And the part then back in the Mat-Su is that getting a community within this this park is going to be a real challenge, just because what you find oftentimes is that the people who made the agreement then sell their land, or they will it to someone. And to have a cohesive group of people who are a group of people, and also then dealing with Representative Osmond's concern about the fact that you're also, you've got families of fish, and you're going to have them also protected. So it is going to take 3 years, right? And just one last thing to put in here. You mentioned having hearings in Ketchikan, and it's across from Prince of Wales, but that's not the same as the people who live within.
Right.
So can you just map out kind of in the test case, or in the perfect model that this bill is creating, how does that work out so that you're taking care of all these different parts?
Yes, through the chair again, Representative. I'll take the Southeast Alaska example first and then talk more about the Susitna. The task force actually did have the opportunity to meet in the community of Kaufman Cove, which is located on Prince of Wales Island. They've only met about six times, to date. There have been several teleconferences. There's always a number available for people to call into to all the meetings, regardless of which community they're in. But the concept was to rotate around to as many communities as possible, to just do what you've suggested, to get as much input as we can. That task force has a one-year life. It will be up at the end of July, and a final report is due to the executive branch on what the recommendations and findings of that group are. I think I've answered that part of the question, so let me move on to up north in the Susitna State Forest. If you have the map in your packet, it might be worth taking a look at the general area map. I was looking at that when Representative Osterman asked his question about the Etna and Deska Rivers, and you can see from the map the Etna is off there far to the west between the Squintna and the Etna blocks and runs kind of in a diagonal on down to the Susitna. There is a portion of the river that does flow through the proposed Susitna State Forest, and then same thing with the Deska. It has some small segments that wind in and out of the proposed state forest. The State's Forest Practices Act is a model act. It's one of the strongest in the country, and it provides two key protections for fish habitat, both for anadromous and high-value resident fish, and also for water quality. And there's site-specific buffers that are left on streams based on the characteristics of the stream. So it's scientific, and it's tailored to the type of stream that you have. Also, if you look at your map, there's a lot of blue corridors on the map. Those are areas that were set aside previously by the legislature as important riverine habitat that were important for anadromous fish. And so there's quarter-mile buffers on each side of the I've got some maps here if that might be helpful for folks.
If you have the color coded map, that might be helpful. You have the color.
I just have the
black and white.
Yeah, I think I probably have enough for the group here.
You don't have it on
okay.
Some around to the blue buffer. I just want to get a whole bundle. I think those are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Which areas were you saying?
I was referring to the Deska and the Yetna Rivers. And on that map, if you take a look, you're going to see quite a few river systems that have blue polygons located around them. Those are roughly quarter-mile buffers on either sides of those stream systems that were identified as very important anadromous fish habitat. And so in addition to the Forest Practices Act, you have this extra layer of protection that's already been put in place along these river systems. I think I could also speak to the state forest we already have in place and just to the general way that we deal with anadromous habitat and timber harvest. We realize the importance of maintaining fish habitat and making sure we have healthy salmon runs. And in the state, we do have that. In fact, salmon production has gone up at the same time that we have had forest management activities going on in Southeast Alaska, South Central, and the interior. So I think the record speaks well for the types of protections we do have. As far as inholdings, you also can look at your map, and they're a little hard to see at the scale, but those are those small pink blocks that are scattered throughout the map. And if you see, we've tried to avoid the main concentrations of those settlement lands, although there are some inholdings within the state forest. We have the same situation in the Tanana Valley State Forest, up the Good Pastor River, on some of the other river systems where people settle. we have the same situation. And we've had very good success through a citizens advisory committee that gives citizens a chance to interact with the division on management objectives and goals in the forest. I would envision in this forest allocating a seat on that citizens committee to inholders, like a homeowners association, something along those lines, and also to a group that is concerned about access. So that was one of the other topics we heard quite a bit about. And so that's proven in the past to be a very good way for us to interact directly with the communities, that citizens group, and it tiers right up to the Board of Forestry, which also has a similar construction in terms of the representation, and that system has worked very well for us in management of the other state forests.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Dick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Chris, I have a question. I fly this country. I'm not a real bush pilot, but I've flown for a few years, and I fly through the south end of this when I go through Merrill Pass, and I fly through through the, you know, Squatna, Yetna, West Squatna when I go through Rainy and Ptarmigan Pass. So I, from the air, I know this country a little bit. And I'm trying to imagine now. I wasn't paying attention, or I wasn't thinking of this, but as I pictured the country, I remember bands of timber along the rivers, mm-hmm. And about 50 feet away from the river, there's really no timber. There's what we call G-pole, mm-hmm. spruce. So I'm having a hard time to picture this as a forest because mm-hmm. it's not a forest. We have bands of trees within 50 feet of the river, and off of that is just, I guess I'm struggling to understand this as a forest. Mm-hmm.
Through the chair, Representative Dick. Yes, we've actually done a timber inventory, which includes a detailed mapping of the different timber resources in this region. And so we've narrowed the 9 million acres down that are state-owned in this area to the higher and more productive lands that have been classified for forestry use. We actually manage these lands already for forestry purposes as they are classified by the area plan. It's just they're not designated as state forest lands. It takes a special designation to do that. And so these lands are actually very productive forest lands. You're mostly hardwoods along the river systems that you've observed is where most of the conifer species, which of course is primarily spruce and cottonwoods, but the upland stands are mixtures of spruce, but primarily birch. Mm-hmm. And these actually are very productive sites. Some of the best birch in the state comes from stands in the Susitna. And I think I mentioned in the first hearing that the Great Alaska Bull Company in Fairbanks gets most of their raw material from this forest because of the high quality of those birch logs. So we have done inventories to identify where the lands are. That's available, that information. It's online, as well as the maps that depict where these stands of timber are.
Quick follow-up. Yeah, Chris, if you just help my staff find those links, I'd really like to look at that.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Dick. I will make sure the briefing paper that's in the bill packet has a link, but I'd be happy to stop by and show them where to find that information.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hey, Chris, do the inholdings, would they expire with the inholding, the title holder's death, or would they be inheritable or transferable?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, this is private land, and it will always be private land. There's no intent by the state to try and acquire that land or restrict the use of that land. In fact, over time, I think it will enhance the access where people want enhanced access, and that's usually the biggest issue we find with inholders. Some people would prefer to have better access, and others want to keep it the way it is. So we're very sensitive to that and often use just winter-only road systems if we have to be near a location, and then that, of course, converts to a trail or some other lower-order type system of access. And so we do work with residents to try and respect their wishes.
Okay. And again, just making clear on the record, so you're saying the state has no interest in ever acquiring this land? There's not going to be efforts to buy it out and consolidate the holdings and eliminate the holdings?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, no, that's not our intent to acquire private land or to try and consolidate lands.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And I know this is somewhat outside the scope of this piece of legislation before us, but if the bill were to pass and we saw an increase in timber harvest, what proportion of it would you anticipate would be for export in the form of round logs, and what would be local use?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Gardner. Right now, there is no round log export out of interior Alaska. That includes, when I say interior, south central Alaska. There has been some in the past, but the logs can only move in the very best market conditions into the export market, and those market conditions do not exist. Our focus as a division is on local manufacturing, high value added manufacturing, and most of our sale authorities give us some advantages to use those types of sale mechanisms to encourage that type of use. There has been one case that has gone to the Supreme Court that was over round log export. It was actually Joe Henry and South Central Timber, if I remember the case correctly, back many years ago. And the state does not have the ability to regulate interstate commerce because of the Interstate Commerce Clause. So we can't actually we can't restrict round log export off of state lands. However, we have mechanisms in place through our sale authorities and policy to try and make sure those logs stay for domestic use and manufacture.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Chris, another question through the chair. Just looking at the map, we just recently voted in the House to support the Kabata Bridge. And forgive me if this question may have been answered, but what would be the relationship between, well, we're going to hopefully be delivering traffic and potentially more people wanting land in this area on the west side of the Cook Inlet. Would the forest preclude development at all for residential purposes? Help me understand generally what the interface would be between the development impulse and the existence of a state forest in the Susitna lands.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Sadler. Once lands are designated, legislatively designated as a state forest, there would not be the ability to dispose of lands for settlement within the state forest. The area planning process that has been gone through for this area has identified settlement lands as part of that process. So the state, through the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Division, Mining, Land, and Water, and that area planning process essentially does maps that provide, that, for lack of a better word to describe it, zoning characteristics for different state land in the valley. And one of those zoning items is settlement lands. So the better settlement lands have already been identified in that planning process and are made available for that purpose. But once the state forest is designated, those lands within the state forest are no longer available for settlement. However, we do not restrict access. We've got a great track record, if I may say so, in allowing access for a variety of development uses. Mining would be a good example. The Pogo Road up in the Tanana Valley State Forest, recent oil and gas development out in Minto Flats, and for a variety of other purposes, and settlement land would certainly fall into that same category.
Okay. Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for this second map. This is the first I've seen this map is today. I've been working off of the map that was in the packet all along. So where did this map come from, and what are these legislative designated areas that you're indicating that are on this map now that were not on the map that we've been working with all along?
Oh, through the chair, Rep. Osterman, I apologize, because there was an earlier version of the map that did not have those blue corridors on them, and I thought the packet had been updated with the most recent one. That was an early question over in Senate Resources, and we had added the blue polygons to help answer the question that you asked, as well as the same question was asked by others in the on the Senate side of this process. There's also very detailed maps in the packet that you have that have each of the blocks identified and broken out, so you can see inholdings in more detail. That should be in the bill package. If it's not, I have some here that I'd be happy to make available to you. But it just provides additional information that you can see more readily.
We don't have the block maps that you're
Representative Osterman, the map that you have today, the color map, was in the packet. It is in the packet.
This is the block map.
Good in yours.
It is black and white, and that might be the difference. But it did go out in the original mailing. I mean, the attachments. Yeah. But just for clarification, but anyway, go ahead.
Yes, through the chair, we can certainly make the color versions available. They're available online through that briefing paper on that web link. All these documents are available and are all produced there in color. But the more detailed maps just give you a closer in view of each of the different blocks that are depicted on the general area map that you have in your hand there. And so those blue corridors, to answer your question, I believe they are on the map that you have now, and perhaps they did not show very well if you just received a black and white copy of the map. I apologize for that.
Okay. Go ahead.
So it says on here these are legislative designated areas. So does this bill that we're working on today designate these areas?
Through the chair, Representative Wasserman, no. Those areas have been previously identified, actually back in the 90s, I believe, is when those went into place before the state had done a Forest Practices Act for that region of the state. Subsequently, we've done, in addition, the state's Forest Practices Act. That region is referred to as Region 2. Southeast Alaska is Region 1, and Interior Alaska is Region 3 for the Forest Practices Act. And those regions are tailored to the types of forests and the types of rivers that are in those locations. So the act changes region to region within the state. So this bill does not affect those corridors. Those are already established and in place.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative?
I've got another meeting I've just been called to.
Okay.
As part of leadership, and I'll be a no rec moving out of the committee. I've not made up my mind exactly what I'm going to do on the floor yet.
Okay. Representative Gardner, did you have your hand up?
If I did, I don't remember.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. And Chris, I don't know if you're going to, it sounds like you're going to make these maps available in color to us, but if you could either give us a link or some access to the mine and land and water maps showing that what the settlement land would be, that'd be nice to see. We're going to do a bunch of maps.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we can do that. That's in the area plan. That's for this area.
Okay. All right. I have a couple of questions. In the backup material that you provided, you indicated that 2.1 million acres is currently managed for forest and timber production in that area, in the Mat-Su area. Does the establishment of the state forest limit the timber activity to the 700,000 plus acres that are proposed in this legislation?
To the chair, no, it does not. We could still continue and are still, as an agency, responsible for managing the forest resources on all state lands that are classified for forestry purposes. Every area plan that the state has lands that are classified that way. Some lands are within a state forest, and other lands are still just generally owned state lands. But we still do practice and manage forestry activities on those lands.
Okay. And so what is the benefit, then, of having a state forest that designates, prioritizes timber harvest compared to lands that are continuing to be harvested that are not in the state forest?
Madam Chairwoman, the advantage, there's a couple, but the two most important ones are the permanence, at least, that this designation would give once it's legislatively designated as a state forest. It indicates that the state has the commitment to manage these lands in perpetuity for sustained yield management of a timber resource, and that's very important for the industry to be able to plan and make long-term investments, and they need to be assured that they're going to have a raw material supply. That's probably one of the key advantages. The second reason would be investment in infrastructure. I have a budget in my division that I have some discretionary funds that we move around for reforestation, for infrastructure, for road construction, bridge construction, other types of infrastructure that's important for management of state lands. I'm willing to make those investments in state forest lands because I know I'll be able to retain that investment for the future. If I make it in a classified piece of land that's general state ownership, I could lose that investment at some point in the future when the area plan is updated and perhaps that forestry land goes to recreational use, or maybe it's decided that it's best to use that land for settlement purposes. And so it's very important to have these anchor forests close in to communities for that easy access to timber and recreation and all the other things these lands bring.
And then one other question on the RS-2477s. Have you identified the existing rights of way in this particular proposal? And will the department continue to protect the state's rights to those RS-2477s?
Yes, Madam Chairwoman. Yes, the RS-247s are not depicted on these maps, but those right of ways are all identified through the Division of Mine and Land and Water, and there would be no changes to those right-of-ways. And, yes, our intention would be to protect those right-of-ways for future access development.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, can you speak a little bit how fire management, how would the land be managed for wildland fire monitoring, protection, and fighting under a state forest designation different from the forestry lands designation?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, initially there would not be any change to the type of firefighting activity on these lands. As you're probably well aware, we have a statewide fire management plan that has three different levels of protection identified for lands in the state. And that plan is still in place and active regardless of whether this is designated as a state forest or not. Now, if these lands are designated, over time you might see some higher levels of protection afforded places that we have active timber sales in or may have active timber sales in the near future. We would, of course, not like to burn that asset up, but in general, there would not change dramatically the type of protection that we would afford those lands, whether they're in or out of the forest.
So it wouldn't make it easier or harder, initially at least. It'd just be the same.
Yeah, through the chair, Reps. Initially, it wouldn't make any, it wouldn't be harder or easier, but as access is developed to these lands for the state forest, it would actually help us with fire response to initial attack anyways. But over time, the management of this forest will also help us manage these high-risk fuel types, especially close into communities. We would do a process that's called a community wildfire protection plan that identifies human habitation, human improvements in relationship to high-risk fuel types. And we actually would do activities in those high-risk fuel types to help reduce that risk to provide some added protection to these communities.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if this is really for Chris or for the bill sponsor, but I'm still sort of concerned about the public process aspect for both the Susitna and the Tongass. And, you know, I'd feel fine about this if it were locally supported. But I would like from somebody maybe to get some kind of record of what meetings were held and if there were mail outs, who the mail list was, and maybe the agenda so that, you know, I can have confidence that the people most directly impacted in both regions have had the opportunity to actively participate in the discussions.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, in the bill packet, there is a about a 2.5-page summary of the public process that's been used to date in the Susitna State Forest planning process. It goes back to it actually originally started in 1985, but this current process really got started in 2008. If that's not in that packet, I'd be happy to provide that to you, but I can give you a quick summary of that. I did go over this at the last meeting, but there's been an extensive public process. Literally hundreds of people have attended the different public meetings up in the valley, and this is part of the area planning process. And in that process, the state forests have this concept of having state forests has been discussed at all those area planning processes, because that's how these lands were classified for forestry use, and that's the first step.
Madam Chair,
if you want, I can run down the list real quickly or make
sure. I'd like a chance to kind of look at it. Does anybody else have that in their packets?
No, that's just the brief.
I do not have it in my packet.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything like that.
And so we received the information from the bill sponsor, and we forwarded that to you. We did not receive the public hearing schedule.
It's entitled Summary of Area Plan and Other Agency Public Process Related to the Proposed Susitna State Forest, and it's dated 4/9/12 if it's in your packet.
Did you have a follow-up?
Well, that's the first you're sitting in, then I'd like the same for the Tongass.
Yeah, the Tongass. Yeah, through the chair, Representative Gardner, I can certainly provide you with the meeting dates, locations, and the agendas for the task force meetings. And again, those have all been advertised as they normally would through the meeting notification process that the state uses. So I'd be happy to provide that information.
Thank you.
And Terry Harvey is getting a copy of the public hearing on the Susitna, on the proposal that he's going to provide to all of us.
Thank you.
Representative Susitna.
Madam Chair, thank you. And I think this is more of a comment, although I think there's question in this. And that is one of the things that I certainly have been a part of is the real need that we have to make sure that we're safeguarding things like forests, because what is happening around the world is we're expanding as a species. I mean, we're taking over the world in many, many ways, and in the 45 years I've been in Alaska, we've been filling up areas with residential and kind of a mix of different uses. And what this does is it creates something that it doesn't necessarily preserve, but it does keep, and that's probably where the question in this comes. As a forest, it's not a theme park. It's something that retains a sense of, or you're dealing with some sustainability. You're making sure that we still have a resource that we can go to and develop as a business hundreds of years from now. Is that sort of true?
Through the chair, Representative, yes, you are correct in that statement. You know, one of the things I deal with my fellow state foresters, colleagues from around the country, one of their biggest issues is just what you've enumerated, and that's urbanization and parcelization of forest lands to smaller and smaller pieces of property, and that's become a very big issue in other parts of the country. I never thought we would actually experience that here in Alaska, and I didn't really pay that much attention until the last 10 to 15 years north of Anchorage. We actually have that problem now. And so that is one key reason that we've proposed the Sitna State Forest, is to try and retain larger blocks of land in public ownership that have a multiple-use sustained yield mandate and how they'll be managed. There's a wide number of uses that people benefit from a state forest. It's not a state park. It's not a state wildlife refuge. It's a more general type of classification that allows many types of uses that Alaskans are accustomed to doing, and that's the purpose, one of the purposes. It's also to help provide that sustainable yield of timber for personal use, to help with energy issues, as well as raw material for the industry.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. I'll ask you, I guess, the same question, general question I'm asking you for. What about what would be the difference for consumers trying to go out and cut firewood on a state forest land versus as the land is currently managed?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Sadler, there would be no difference. A permit is required right now on general state land for personal use, and a permit would still be required on state forest lands. The one thing different you might see is I actually have a road maintenance budget for state forest land, and I might actually plow the roads and grade them on occasion. And so I think people would actually enjoy better access to the personal use program in a state forest than they might just on general state lands.
And along those lines, could you speak a little bit more about what kind of transportation facilities, what kind of roads might be placed through there?
Through the chair, Rep. Sadler, that's part of the planning process that we'll go through. There's already some road systems in this area that have been developed as part of the timber management process. The West Petersville Road is a good example. That's up in the East Petersville block. Over on the east side, there's the Zero Lake Road System and the Willer Cache Road Systems that are road systems that we've developed and improved, actually put in new bridges, and have significantly upgraded those roads over time. We do that through the timber sale program. Commercial purchasers of timber are required to do road maintenance as well as do road construction and bridge construction as part of the purchase of that timber. We do the fair market appraisal of those infrastructure investments and deduct that from the appraisal of the timber. So it is one way the state benefits in terms of infrastructure development.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mace, for the testimony today and answering
You're
the questions. We may
welcome.
Bring you back up. I would like to provide opportunity for the individuals that have signed up to testify.
You bet.
Madam
Thank
Chair,
you.
One quick one.
Okay.
This summary of the plan and public agency processes, do you know who put this together?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Gardner. I had my forest planner, Jim Schwarber, put that document together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Botan, former state forester. Tom, did you want to testify?
No, I guess for questions only.
For questions only, okay. Buck Linda Kugel with SEAC, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairwoman Munoz. It's a pleasure to be here today, and it's good to see everyone here. We've got some testimony that I'd like to share, if we could, with the committee. There's just one page. Kept it short. On behalf of our members, we wish to voice our surprise, disappointment, and dismay over Section 2 of Senate Bill 159 that's before you today. When introduced in January, this bill only included the Susitna Forest provisions. That's was its entire focus. And as you heard from the state forester and the bill sponsor, there's been a lot of public involvement in developing that proposal, and SEAC does not have a position on that bill. That's out of our neck of the woods, so to speak. However, without warning and with zero effort to inform affected communities, Alaska Native tribes, or the public, that version of Senate Bill 159 was stricken, and they replaced it with a version that would call for substantial changes in the ownership of the Tongass. This committee is the first committee of the Alaska House to consider this bill, and we call on members of this committee to reject Section 2 of the bill and to insist on a fair and full public discussion of this controversial provision that would substantially change ownership and management of the Tongass National Forest. How the Tongass National Forest is managed means a great deal to the people who live in it and depend upon its incredible resources for a variety of sport, recreation, commercial ventures. We're working with a host of partners to build a diverse, stable, and sustainable economy in the region, a future that ensures that our watersheds, our community hunting and fishing areas, important native cultural sites, etc., are protected for the long term for future generations. Again, we respectfully request the committee to table this measure, or in the alternative, to strike and amend the bill to get rid of Section 2 of this bill. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions. Representative Sisna.
Well, thank you. And of course, that instantly brings to mind another person to question, and that is Section 2. Was it added as a CS this time, or was it on the Senate side that it was
added? Representative Sisna, it was added in Senate Finance Committee.
Okay. And my other question is, because this is Community and Regional Affairs, and we're concerned about the local areas. We're concerned about the community and what it's dealing with, right? So that is our job. And what I'd like to know, that the Forest Service or the Department of Forestry said that they actually have had meetings in the area for some time. In fact, there's been kind of an ongoing process. And are you aware of that? That's what I'm kind of interested in. I'm more than interested. I'd like to know because the bill is dealing with one forest. Well, it's a grouping, but it's one proposal, and there's a process that needs to happen with that one proposal. And I think it's what I really enjoy about this bill is that it's really talking about trying to make positive that you've got a system that works over sustainably over essentially in perpetuity is what we want, right? Want to be able to live on this planet in a good way forever. It'd be great if humans could do it. Big challenge. But nonetheless, so adding this one section in the Finance Committee took out what this committee looks at. And in Southeast, you're saying that that the community process hasn't happened on this yet, but what this section is saying is urging the governor. It's not really, it's urging him to negotiate and renegotiate. That's just another kind of thing. It's not really making it happen. It's suggesting that it happens, is the way I'm reading it. So, then I guess the question of the bill sponsor is this a deal breaker or is it not? And for you, just how, I mean, you've read the language. It really doesn't say that it's got to be. It's just thinking it would. And maybe if it was amended to say, after looking at the development of the Matanuska project, that they urged them to look at what's happening in the Tongass, maybe just saying it differently. Tell me what your reaction is.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna. I would not equate the process that the state forester mentioned that's happened down here in Southeast, the governor's task force, with a broad, open, public forum where all stakeholders have a say at the table. I think it's, SEAC's been around for 41 years, and we've involved with Tongass management for that long time, and it never ends, and there's always issues, and you try to be responsive to changing conditions and needs that are happening, and the forest planning process on the national level provides that forum for doing that. The task force that the state forester mentioned is not that inclusive of a process, and we think it sticks to the old timber first paradigm from the settler days here in Southeast Alaska, rather than looking forward long-term needs of this region and the world, and having a sustainable economy that where you can use your resources appropriately. I'm not certain if I had a lot of things I was going to say as you were asking your question, and I'm not certain if I focused on the heart of it, but you are right. The language is intent language. It doesn't substantively require the governor to submit a bill to the legislature, but it urges him to, you know. So its legal effect is not immediate or questionable. But on the other hand, any time this legislature makes a statement, people listen. And I don't think it's not our, we don't believe that this statement about getting more forest land from the Tongass for a timber first priority is appropriate. And I would just note, over the last two sessions, the state forest bill in Southeast was created. Mm-hmm. First it was created and then it was expanded. Mm-hmm. And we're still waiting to see if the promises of state forest management on those type of lands will in fact prove up here and be comparable to the opportunities that we have on federal lands to participate in the kind of analysis that occurs, et cetera.
Thank you. We have other people signed up, and we have only a half an hour left to go, and I really appreciate you being here today. But I did want to also add for the record that the amendment, Section 2, was added in Senate Resources and not Senate Finance. So I just want the record to reflect that. Representative Sadler.
A very brief question. I'd be curious to know the witness's opinion on Section 1 of the bill.
Go ahead. Response to Section 1. And then, yeah.
Yeah, very briefly.
Excuse me, Section 1 is the Susitna.
Susitna.
The Susitna Forest.
Yes, we do not have any objections to the Susitna. And,
thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify, at the last page of your packet is a letter that I saw this morning from the Organized Village of Cake, one of the federally recognized Indian tribes here in southeast Alaska that expresses concern about state management of their homeland because the state does not have formal government-to-government relationships with tribes in Alaska. So it is a different program when you move from federal ownership to state ownership here in southeast.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager.
Okay. We also have... yes.
I haven't seen that letter. Is that in our packet?
It's in the packet.
Okay.
Thank you. Online we have Steve Mendive, but I don't believe he wishes to testify. Mr. Bhutan is here for questions. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify at this point? Yes, come forward, please.
Madam Chair, members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, my name is Eddie Grasser, and one of the clients I represent is Safari Club International. I believe the sponsor of the bill has a letter from us supporting this legislation. Mostly, I wanted to reiterate a couple things that Mr. Mace said. Happened to have been here in general working for Representative Larson at the time when the Six Rivers or Recreational Rivers Bill was passed, and that was 1986. So the river corridors that he was referencing that are on your map that are in the blue polygons has been in existence for a long time, and our goal was to protect those waterways for fisheries, but also to protect the access for fishing. So that legislation passed quite a few years ago. And then also, in reference to questions asked about public process, I was born and raised in Palmer before statehood and have participated in many public hearings on the whole Susitna Area Plan, which, as I recall, started back in the early 80s. And part of the Six Rivers Bill program was what came out of that process, which, again, was passed in 1986. So there's been extensive hearings for years on this state land. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Grasser. Are there questions? Oh, thank you for your testimony. So at this point, I'd like to call back the sponsor of the legislation, Senator Menard, for wrap-up comments, and then we'll take action on the bill.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate we've had some intense discussion and dialogue's always good, and I hope all your questions have been answered sufficiently. I think that we are so fortunate to have someone of the caliber from forestry as Chris Mace. And again, as we go through a process, you know, CS is oftentimes comes through, and we had very strong feelings in the resource committee from Southeast legislators that they wanted to somehow, since this is such a good piece of legislation, to not forget the Tongass. And I think that was a fair submittal. We waited. In fact, I was almost getting impatient waiting for legal to get the right language in there. So the urging of the governor, just some intent language, it's an awareness thing, and I don't apologize for that. I appreciate their concern, too. So, you know, oftentimes you get a good piece of legislation and it's going fairly well, and then you say, oh, but what? Don't forget about us too down the road. So with that, I don't have any more comments to make, and I just so appreciate each one of you listening diligently to the testimony.
Okay. Questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is a comment that was made about the tribal partnering, and that seems to me, since in fact so many places in Alaska, that is the people who are living out where the forests are, is in fact tribal groups, and what is our relationship? What is the forestry relationship with tribes?
Well, I would think that they are one of the partners, certainly, but in this particular area, there aren't tribal areas, it's my understanding, in my forest area. So,
I think we're relating to the letter from the community of Cake and the government-to-government possibilities with the tribal government. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should have Mr. Mace come forward to address, mm-hmm. answer that question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like me to stay?
Why don't you stay here, and then, Chris, if you could answer the question, please.
Yes, for the record, again, my name is Chris Mache, the state forester, and there's a couple of things. I'm not an expert on the government-to-government relationship aspect, but I did work for Tanana Chiefs Conference for about 15 years in their forestry program, so I have a little bit of experience. The division incorporates tribal and native corporation interests in our Citizens Advisory Committee and in the Board of Forestry. Both of those have a seat specifically designated for Native community participation or Alaska Native corporations, sometimes both, depending on the circumstances. So at least in my division, that's one way we reach out and ensure that that particular voice is being heard in our management decisions. And then going to the government-to-government relationship, that's really an executive branch issue, and I'm not sure of how that's handled specifically here in Southeast. I do know when the Pogo Mine was being constructed up in Fairbanks, there were government-to-government processes that were put in place, but I believe that was mostly through a federal nexus, perhaps, as opposed to a state nexus. So I'm afraid I can't be more specific on that aspect of your question.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Are there additional questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it actually comes to the point of the question, but in reading through the background material on the bill and so forth, it would be my desire, of course, to make sure and protect the habitat, to understand the value and benefit of the state forest. But I do want to put on the record that it would be my desire and intent that in addition to the forest practices and the habitat management, that we do protect the logging, hunting, trapping, and motorized access uses in any new state forest in the Sisseton area, and that appointments to the Citizens Advisory Council would account for that and protect those uses.
Chris, would you like to address that?
Yeah, just through the chair, Representative Sadler. There is a specific section that addresses traditional uses on state forest land, and actually in the Haines State Forest, there's a particular statute site that essentially enumerates the things you just brought forward.
Very good, thanks.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also sit on the Resources Committee, and so that sounds like maybe where this will be going next. I know concerns were raised about tribal-to-tribal or government-to-government relations and then the issues with Southeast, and so if it's possible that we have some folks from Southeast maybe be a part of trying to figure out the solution to that. So thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Dick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chris, just between now and Resource Committee, if we could find out if you have the data on each one of these areas, you know, Mount Susitna, South Gwentna, West Gwentna, Yetna, East Gwentna, Susitna, and East Petersville, and West Petersville, we just have some idea as to what logging operations are going on in those areas at this time. That would really help me.
Through the chair, Representative Dick, I think we can provide that information. We can just go block by block and indicate whether there's been active timber sales in those areas or not, say, in the past 20 years or something like that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your presentation today. Thank you, Mr. Mache, for helping with the presentation.
You're
as
welcome.
Well. Okay. So we have the bill before us, SB 159. What is the wish of the body? Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, since we don't really have yet the data about the public process for the Tongass, I'm really uncomfortable moving this forward and leaving that in. I'm not confident that it's had the kind of thorough vetting by local communities that the Susitna part has, and I'm happy to support the Susitna forest, but not the Tongass. So I would move that we delete Section 2, offer an amendment to delete Section 2.
I would object.
Object, okay. Discussion on the motion? Representative Sisna?
Well, I would speak in favor of this motion because I think that I think it's important to get this going. I think it's important to actually have this model have something that's obviously been worked on for a long time be making it's 3 years, so three more years that are going to go into working on all of the questions that people have asked. on one site, and there are obviously things that we don't know about that Section 2 brings up. And although it's not, to me, a really, it's not as big a problem as not moving forward. I'm going to vote for this, and I think it's not a bad thing to vote for, I guess.
Okay, Madam Secretary, would you call the roll on the motion to delete Section 2 of the bill, please?
Representative Sadler.
No.
Representative Sisna.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Osterman. Not present. Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Dick.
No.
Chairman Yost.
No.
2-4.
Okay, the motion fails on a vote of 2-4. Are there additional motions to amend the bill?
Madam Chair.
Representative Sadler.
I would move to move the bill out of committee in order. I would move to move out CS for SSB 159 resources, 27LS1179/ECHO, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Okay. Is there objection to the motion?
Madam Chair, can we just discuss it a moment?
Sure.
And that is simply that I'm going to object to moving it today, not because I don't want to move the bill forward, but I'd like to see the data that we've requested before we move it forward.
Okay. Representative Sisna.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I will vote to move the bill forward. Because what I know from my 40-plus years here is that we're losing opportunities to have the very really outstanding areas in Alaska in something like this. This is a model that actually is keeping something in place that is special, that in fact we are going to lose a lot of the Matanuska Valley lands to subdivisions, to big blocks of different kinds of usage than what forever was there. And I think this is an important model to see and make positive that we can ensure that it's done exactly the way that they're talking about, and that we watch that. And that Section 2 is something that this legislature works to delay until there really is something that you look at. Did that model work? And that's the right way to do things, is to have a model, work on it, do it right, and then build others that replicate what you learned was right. So I'm a yes vote when it comes time.
Okay. Yes, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would support the motion, and with the intent, however, at the next committee being resources to also try and address Representative Gardner's concerns, because I think they are valid concerns, and so I more so in my just the interest of time, I understand that we're under a crunch. So.
And Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw my objection because I'm on the next committee too. Okay.
And I am as well, so we'll make sure that
gets
included.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
See you there.
Okay, well, the intent is that we will get that information at the Resources Committee and make sure that all of the members have that information. So the objection to the motion to move the bill has been withdrawn. Is there further objection to moving the bill? Seeing none, the bill CS 4159 version E passes out of committee today. Thank you for your testimony, and thank you to everybody that showed up to hear the bill.
Oh, well.
Yep. We're done.
Are we done? Is there anything else to come before the committee today?
Mm-hmm.
Hearing nothing, we are adjourned. Thank you.